You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Daily Nationalist. This, of course, is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and it's being recorded on the 10th of April, 2024. I have no choice, it seems to me, than to continue to deal with the evangelical death cult in America, represented in part by the Republicans. That is to say, those like Tim Walberg. I'm saying this right after the attack on the Iranian embassy in Syria. But I'm picking on Tim Walberg because he is an idiot. And it was just a few weeks ago, it was the 25th of March, 2024. Walberg is a Republican from Michigan in Congress. And he, and there's a few other Republicans who have done this, called for the increased genocide of Arabs, Christian and Muslims, on the Gaza Strip, and inherently elsewhere. He was at a town hall in a place called Dundee, Michigan. He was asked a question about American money spent specifically on the port, since Israel's blocked all the land routes on the Gaza coast for the sake of delivering assistance. And he used this, of course, as a way to attack Joe Biden, despite the fact that Joe Biden doesn't know where he is, and their policies are identical in this regard. And he said, I don't think we should, and he's referring to building this aid port. I don't think any of our aid that goes to Israel support our greatest ally, arguably maybe in the world to defeat Hamas and Iran and Russia and probably North Korea and there in China too, with them helping Hamas. We shouldn't be spending a dime on humanitarian aid. It should be like Nagasaki and Hiroshima. Get it over quick. Now, despite that awful grammar, I call him an idiot for a reason, and the fact that those weren't sentences, we can gather what he means. And that is that either literally or figuratively, the Arabs of the area should be subject to nuclear weapons and simply wiped out. Now, this comment, such as it was, did go viral for a while right afterwards, and his spokesman, Mike Rourke, said it was true, the validity is real, the video is real, it's valid, etc. And they doubled down on this claim. The UN says a building of this port is required because there's seven land routes specifically laid out, and they're all blocked, so genocide is the order of the day there. And for months, the UN has been saying that the famine is imminent. Well, it's been a famine for quite a while, even before the war began. And, you know, I spent a couple of weeks on the International Court of Justice and how idiotic the entire thing was. Coming from, of all people, the South African delegation, who, you know, although they're correct in this regard, has no right to talk about genocide at all. But then the court called on the Israelis, which didn't make any sense, to allow this kind of humanitarian assistance. International law is largely a joke. It's simply a rhetorical weapon and absolutely nothing else. And of course, Israel has refused any of this. And according to Walberg, anyone who says otherwise is an anti-Semite. Of course, he's an evangelical. Back in the 70s, he was a pastor at Grace Fellowship Church in Indiana. He went to one of these Bible colleges. And he rationalizes his murderous position on this very bizarre and historically and theologically inaccurate interpretation of of the Old Testament. But he does believe, and this is not meant to be a rhetorical exaggeration, that Jews, by their racial existence, have this divinity about them. So he went on to say, and this is in 2019, University of Michigan, that Benjamin Netanyahu has this moral clarity. And this is a direct quote. He says, "In his presence, I understand very clearly he knows good from evil, right from wrong, success from failure." In other words, his very existence there radiates this. Now, no one's told him, of course, that Israel's been bombing churches of all backgrounds in Gaza and elsewhere for a long time. One of his own Baptist churches was razed to the ground there. And 10-15% of the population is Christian, although only a tiny percent is Protestant. There is the pastor of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Bethlehem, a guy named Munther Isaac. And on March 30th, he said in his their Easter sermon, he said, "A genocide has been normalized. People of faith can only truly claim to follow a crucified Savior. We can never be okay with this. We should never accept this normalization. We should never be okay with children dying from starvation. And in times like this, we Palestinians look at the cross, identify with it, and see Jesus identifying with us. At Easter, we relive his arrest, torture, and execution at the hands of empire with the complicity of the religious ideology." That, too, isn't really, you know, that doesn't make a lot of sense, but I think we know what he's trying to say. And he's saying the precise opposite of what someone like Wahlberg says, of course, who lives in comfort. Wahlberg also authored a letter back in October. Many of you have come across it. I think it was 43, 45 other congressmen calling on the Secretary of Education to, quote, take action against any university that permits any kind of anti-Israel speech or any kind of anti-Israel organization, as if this is something that he thinks the state has the power to do. So, but this is typical of the logic of special pleading, that he'll reject this kind of thing in reference to any other group. But when it comes to the Jews, he becomes an entirely different person. It's really hard to be pro-life on the one hand, be against euthanasia, but support the open slaughter, nuking, in fact, of Arabs of any background. The fact that he mentions Hiroshima and Nagasaki means he's supporting that as well, that this is a good thing. Now, this is all cover stories. The only thing that he's going to go to the mat for is Israel. He's a strict constructionist, in other words, except where Zionism is concerned. But let me before I get into something else, let me read his letter. This is a primer of equivocation, unwarranted assumptions, formal and informal logical fallacies, and it's what special pleading does to otherwise intelligent people. Here's what he says. "In recent years, schools have been quick to weigh in on a plethora of social issues, but suddenly, many have gone silent as anti-Semitism rages across college campuses. This deafening silence and lack of moral clarity by college administrators comes as student groups openly celebrate a terrorist attack motivated by bigotry. These schools pride themselves on being inclusive and tolerant, but it's clear there's an anti-Semitism crisis on these campuses, so we're calling on the Biden administration to take action to protect Jewish students and to visit these schools to examine why they are such a hotbed for anti-Semitism." Now, can you imagine actually writing this and putting it out in public as if you're an intelligent person? But this is what special pleading does. Special pleading is almost a form of cognitive dissonance. So any criticism, according to him, of Israeli genocide is inherently wrong, and it was only bigotry that led to the attack on Israel from Gaza, according to this genius of geopolitical science. And it's part of this evangelical death cult that Jews should be exempt from moral claims entirely due to their race. They are a divine people who can exude righteousness just by their very racial being, even when killing Christians, which they've been doing since ancient times. The cherry on top of all this is that he's aware that Jews rarely vote for guys like this in American elections, but we all know that this has nothing to do with elections whatsoever. I know it's depressing to talk about guys like this, that this is somehow taken seriously in politics at all. But I wanted to start off with that before we get into the meat of the matter, the airstrike on the embassy of Iran in Damascus. This is nothing new. The context, however, makes it a little different. This is one of a long line of atrocities like this. There's a commander of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, Mohammed Reza Zalidi, and his deputy, too, Raimi, among, I think, seven people that were killed in this attack. Now, there is only the facade of disagreements between Netanyahu and the unelected zombie of Joe Biden and whoever controls him. And the U.S., of course, is complicit on this. Iran, as a result, demanded a hearing before the Security Council on the 2nd of April. And they received it, and the deputy ambassador spoke for the government in Tehran. And according to the transcription from Press TV that very day, they say that Iran's mission to the UN called on the world body to categorically denounce this violation of international regulations, as if somehow international regulations are the issue. But they have to speak, I guess, in the language of this kind of diplomacy. Zahra Ershadi, who was a deputy permanent representative to the UN from Iran, made the point, and he's very clearly right, that Israel is seeking to escalate tensions in the region and avoiding taking any kind of responsibility. It's a cowardly way to proceed, because Israel, the truth is losing, as may have been expected. Their security forces are stretched to the limit regardless. Even without this war, they were overstretched. There's not that many Jews. And what do? They need to create groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda and try to bring the Americans in. And last week, you know, we talked about the Security Council ceasefire resolution. And we all know it didn't matter what was passed and what the language was. Netanyahu's entire political career is probably over, but he stays in office probably insofar as the war continues. And as we said, you know, Greenfield had abstained. And of course, it did not call for a ceasefire, as I mentioned last week. But this attack in Damascus, the context is what makes this different from all the tens of thousands of other killings that Israel's engaged in the U.S. By association. Tens of thousands have already been massacred by the IDF on Gaza itself. And for the first time in a long time, the overwhelming majority has been non-combatants. Children under 15, women, the elderly, the infirm, etc. And in the war to the north with Hezbollah in Lebanon, again, there's a deliberate attack on hospitals going back as long as Israel's existed. But just the 82 war on Lebanon, the bombing of Beirut targeted these things. You know, schools, universities, businesses, you know, transportation, infrastructure, anything, aid distribution centers. And of course, the IDF has been defeated by Hezbollah before, as Yemen imposed its own blockade, which is succeeding. They have many allies: Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Yemen, Iran, and trying to maintain Israel as an outpost for imperial interests, well, certainly not American interests, in places like North Africa and the Middle East. There has been an attempt, not just from people like Wahlberg, to silence criticism. But for the first time, you have mainstream front page attacks on Israel, from Democrats, of course, no Republicans, but a handful of people, usually from, you know, for the wrong reasons. But this was unthinkable a decade ago. Now, in a phone call between the Iranian president, Raisi, and Bashar al-Assad, in that conversation, those two made it clear that this is not being done from a position of strength. The attack was from a position of weakness. And both governments are committed to continuing the axis of resistance and doing everything in their power to keep Turkey from its current neutrality. So diplomatically and militarily, it's been nothing but setbacks for the IDF. So during the Security Council discussions on April 2nd, you had numerous governments, not just the Iranian, speaking out against Tel Aviv. Moscow said that Israel's actions are meant to fuel this regional conflict. It's not just a matter of Syria's sovereignty. But the Russians said that they're of the view that such aggressive actions by Israel are designed to further fuel this conflict and broaden it. China said the exact same thing. Again, they stated it in languages of the UN Charter that no one really cares about. But that's code for, you know, they're killing people. They need this to justify and to destroy the axis of resistance, to have a single great reset. Now, so far, we're, you know, 10 days later, not much has been said about it in Tel Aviv or Washington. Now, not that this matters, but the Gallup poll suggests that very few Americans approve of any of this, or of policy in the Middle East. Even among Democratic Party voters, I think it's under 50%, 47, approved of Joe Biden's handling of this situation, assuming that Joe Biden knows where any of this is happening. People who control him certainly are poorly handling it, but public opinion doesn't make any difference. But again, for the first time, this sort of thing has made the front pages. That now it's mainstream to criticize Zionism, which automatically means that there are millions of people for the very first time who are seeing the Jews in something other than this light of admiration. Yes, they are killing babies as a matter of public policy with American money, and this is called democracy. Democracies are allowed to do this kind of thing, making the Arabs for the first time look sympathetic. This kind of escalation, this is unprecedented. It's been a long time since Israel has bombed targets inside Iran, which technically this would be, even though it was in Damascus, because any embassy from the, you know, Vienna Convention, diplomatic missions are part of the home country. Diplomatic premises are considered part of the sovereignty and territory of the state represented. So that means the attack on the consulate is a direct attack on Iranian territory. And very dangerous for the United States, the Saudi Arabian, I've seen this on Twitter, have condemned this as a cowardly attack. And it was just a little bit more than a year ago that, thanks to China, Saudi Arabia has restored its relationship with Iran, which, you know, given the power and the wealth of Saudi Arabia and the new government there, we've talked about that, I think, a few months ago, that this is an absolute nightmare for the U.S. and Israel. One of the stronger variables, of course, includes Turkey. But this attack was in a densely populated part of Damascus, the Mezib section. There were a bunch of innocent people who were killed here. A champion swimmer from Syria, by the way, was hospitalized in very serious condition. And most of the Middle East vehemently condemned this. And the Iranians now have every right to prepare any kind of retaliatory response with Russian backing. Despite the BlackRock regime in Washington not wanting this to expand, they're supporting this expansion. Unfortunately, Donald Trump was the one who ripped up the treaty with the Iranians, meaning that Israel could keep Iran as its number one opponent. But Netanyahu is continuously less and less popular as time goes on, not just in Jerusalem with the Haredi, but also in the refusal for a ceasefire to deal with any kind of Israeli hostages. And remember, when we talk about casualties, when the Israelis are talking about their own dead, we have to multiply by at least three. But for as far as Netanyahu is concerned, this is a huge deflection. I'm not one to make the argument that a war is a deflection from domestic problems, but in this case, it may well be. But so far, it hasn't succeeded. In fact, nothing he's trying to do militarily has succeeded, whether it be in military policy or in its domestic ricochet, striking Iranian diplomatic property in Damascus was a way, being very media savvy, for obvious reasons, to take the focus off of Gaza. Struggling, doing anything to get the U.S. involved in a conflict with Iran, which has gone back to the very foundation of that entity. But the BlackRock administration is very reluctant to deal all of this. But Israel controls the legislature, as we've already discussed. The claim that this administration wants Netanyahu to deliver humanitarian aid, those who control the White House are well aware of what this war is for and what the wars in the past, the so-called Arab Springs, have been about, and that's returning countries who were in the process of developing to third and fourth world status. It's not nuclear weapons in Iran, it's nuclear power, and the same thing for Iraq, and I've dealt with that at great length too. Netanyahu is listening to these symbolic attacks or criticisms, knowing full well that they're not meant, and the U.S. is in no position to do anything. Now, hypothetically, cutting the Israelis off weapons would help end this, but it can never be done. So you have 35,000 dead, and that's a very low estimate of Arab deaths, not casualties, and that the regime is fully responsible for this. Making matters worse, you know, we're talking about 6 months after the invasion of Gaza began, both sides of the aisle in Tel Aviv are opposed to Netanyahu, and has shown zero interest in bringing any hostages back. And really, Israel doesn't have that capacity. Making matters worse, you have the embassy attack, which now Israel has to face Hezbollah. I've been talking about them for a very long time. They're now at peak strength. And since the war began, since this recent war began, you know, Hezbollah is almost beyond the guerrilla category. It's almost a regular army. And they've been tying up many IDF units so Hamas can continue its resistance elsewhere. But the embassy attack is just going to increase recruitment, both inside and outside Lebanon. Hezbollah is a very competent, it's a regular Shiite organization that controls much of South Lebanon. And has tremendous popularity throughout the Islamic world, although not just the Shiite world. Of course, the elimination of Zionism has been a primary goal, as the elimination of their group has been a primary goal for Israel. That's the case for all Arab groups, except maybe for the Lebanese Catholics. But they're an experienced guerrilla force. I don't think the U.S. could ever handle them if that were to occur, which it will not. They fought and won many times against the Israeli entity, especially in 2000, where they defeated the South Lebanon army. Since 1990, Hezbollah has been a part of Lebanese politics, and they're now a regular, very, very popular and very powerful part of Lebanese civic life. Hezbollah and its allies had 11 out of 30 cabinet seats just maybe 10 years ago. Maybe 15 years ago, and they were given veto power there. In 2008, that new cabinet in Lebanon had a draft policy statement recognizing Hezbollah as a integral part of Lebanese life, and because of the fact that they have a right to, quote, liberate and recover lands occupied by Israel. Now, as far as Lebanese politics are concerned, and that's becoming more and more important after the strike on the embassy, Hezbollah is part of something called the March 8th Alliance. And the main issue is Syria's role in Lebanon. The U.S. backed the March 14th Alliance, which is anti-Syrian. The March 8th Alliance has numerous parties, continually popular. I think it has a plurality of support amongst not just Shiite Muslims either. Hezbollah has support in Christian areas of Lebanon, Russians, many other places. They've fought in the Syrian civil war. They're well aware that ISIS is an American creation. They've said this many times. And I think in 2018, the Lebanese general election, Hezbollah had 12 seats. And its alliance gained 70 out of 128. And their popularity continues to grow. The Israelis wanted them to disarm after the Israeli withdrawal of South Lebanon. But of course, they refused. And from 2006 onward, because of these victories, their strength grew tremendously. They have roughly between 85 and 100,000 experienced fighters. They have a media, social services. They have an intelligence unit that has penetrated the IDF. You know, these aren't thugs. And Nasrallah is a competent leader here. So militarily speaking, they're Israel's nightmare. They're the American nightmare. The Russians call them explicitly a legitimate socio-political force. And they say the same to Hamas as well. And of course, they're right. They're a legitimate army that attacks civilian targets with far less frequency than Israel does. So when the war began, on October 8th, Hezbollah shelled the Sheba Farms, which is borders the Golan Heights. And this has tied up a lot of Israeli artillery. The response to that, too, Lebanese children were killed. And they actually exchanged airstrikes in that part of Lebanon as they were getting ready to invade Gaza. As most of you know, Amnesty International has, for once, did something good and exposed the use of white phosphorus poison gas. And it was on October 16th that the IDF fired those phosphorus shells into southern Lebanon. And for once, and they've actually been pretty consistently good on this. Amnesty International has demanded that the use of poison gas by the IDF be investigated. But enemies of the U.S. have been using poison gas since at least the Chechnya war, where they were supplied with gas shells. And you have a substantial amount of those who are severely injured and who died because of the use of phosphorus gas in towns like Daria, Mezub, places like that in South Lebanon. And so this has been a back and forth. There have been a bunch of Iranian journalists right after that were killed, that the UN, the UNIFIL, UNIFIL, the peacekeepers in Lebanon, completely agreed with all of this. Hassan Nasrallah, of course, the head of Hezbollah, has huge rallies, and that the presence of American warships doesn't exactly worry them because they know they're in no position to get involved with the Shiite militia. But as I mentioned, the attacks on hospitals, and specifically EMTs, the emergency technicians, the attacks on two ambulances in early November of last year, and deliberately targeting. I mean, they're well aware, and more than anyone else, where military installations are versus civilian ones. So when they attack a family, they're well aware of it. Firing rockets from Lebanon to Hafia and places like that. And as the Al-Qassam brigades continue to engage them across border. And the use of anti-tank missiles on the IDF has been extremely effective. They know precisely where military installations versus civilian, especially medical infrastructure. So in December, Hamas announced with Hezbollah assistance a new unit in Lebanon, the Al-Aqsa Flood Vanguard, which has grown tremendously. As far as Lebanese politics are concerned, even when Hezbollah's coalition partners lost their majority in 2022, their numbers as a group continued to increase. So in 2022, just their faction gained around 40% of the vote that year. And that's in a seven coalition, there's got to be 100 political parties there. That's a seven coalition race. And it was not long after that the Israelis killed the mayor of Taba in South Lebanon. and several hospitals. Now, the former defense minister, Benny Gantz, in Tel Aviv, contacted not too long after this Anthony Blinken, and he said, well, Hezbollah's movements against us mean that we have to dedicate more resources to South Lebanon, and therefore the U.S. has to enter the war, again, which is day-to-day. They called for international pressure on the government of Lebanon to use its army to fight Hezbollah. And of course, that's absolutely impossible. The Israelis simply expect governments to fight their own self-interest to assist Israel's. So the point is, nothing here is new, but Israel is losing. They're losing not just in the military capacity, they're losing in the diplomatic capacity as well. That for the first time, you have mainstream exposés of Israel's attacks on hospitals. March 27th was another one. The Israelis claimed their airstrike on Hibariya, March 27th. The Israelis claimed that they were militants. Hezbollah said this is nonsense. And the UN came out and said, no, these were EMTs. And the Lebanese Ministry of Health condemned this. Perfectly normal for Israel. But what isn't normal is that this got some mainstream coverage. Israel's also targeted the Aleppo International Airport and everything else. Mainstream figures condemning this. The very fact that the Democrats have written a letter demanding this administration to conduct a special investigation into the airstrike, the one that killed 7 employees of the World Central Kitchen not that long ago. I never heard of that group before. They said, given the recent attack on humanitarian workers and the worsening humanitarian crisis, we believe it is not justified to approve further arms transfers to Israel. And that was also April 1st, where the Israelis bombed the convoy of the World Central Kitchen Organization in central Gaza Strip, killing 7 people of different nationalities. The very day that they wanted to widen this war in attacking Iranian territory in Syria. We started off with a letter from that idiot Wahlberg, and now we have another letter written on April 5th of 40 congressmen saying just that, saying this, the very opposite of what Wahlberg is saying. The IDF is well aware who they're bombing. They're well aware that terrorizing civilians is part of their policy. They don't believe in any such thing, and certainly the Likud doesn't, as innocent civilians. That's the point of all this. That's why they cut off all humanitarian assistance. It's not the first time. Food and other forms of assistance are weapons of war. And it takes a tremendous amount of this intellectually dishonest special pleading to justify it. But that's what the Republicans now have bet their political future on. As depressing as it is, thank you everyone for listening, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.